Welcome to Mechadoo About Nothing, the only mecha podcast handed down to us by our father. I'm your host, Ian Gregory.
And I'm your host, Daniel Forziat.
And this week we're on Giant Robo again, episodes, movies, OVAs 3 through 5. You know, the intro really makes it sound like we're brothers, Dan. But that's not true. We're co-workers. Wait, I said handed down to our father, like our singular father. But
yeah, okay. Yeah, I forgot that we joke about that all the time, though. Yeah, that Ian and I are actually not friends anymore. We're just co-workers.
Call into the same place once a week.
Yeah, it's like all camaraderie has been just killed at this point. It's like, listen, man, all right,
if you weren't in such a weird time zone, you could show up to more like friend group events, but it's hard for you to call into things.
Yeah, I think it also beats us down regularly when we have to just like, I don't want to swear, but we just have to go through the shit, man. And it's just like, neither of us wants to be here. It's a bad show. We have like 40 more episodes to watch of it. I won't name any specifics, but
wait, did we ever watch a 50 episode show we didn't like?
How long was Full Metal Panic? 40?
24.
24. I'm like,
it just felt like 30. We did it in 3 weeks. We did Full Metal Panic in the same number of weeks as we're doing Giant Robo, which feels insane because Full Metal Panic felt like it was 100 hours long.
Didn't we watch another show that was like really long that we didn't like? I swear we did.
No, Macross 7 got to us, but it wasn't
bad. Oh, yeah, I have bad memories of Macross 7.
Razaphon was only 24 episodes. We've been pretty lucky with our long picks, and we chose not to watch Double Zeta because we knew we wouldn't like it.
Yeah.
A tactical decision, and I think a good one.
I agree.
Okay, so yeah, Giant Robo 3 through 5, the middle portion of this OVA, which means we're dealing with the years 1994, 1995, and 1996, I believe.
God.
This is still really good, though.
Yeah, I felt myself not caring too much about like episode 3 and 4, and then episode 5 was all of a sudden like a huge banger for me.
I think it went a linear line for me. Like 3 was okay, 4 was better, 5 was the best.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there. Like I think like 3, like nothing, it feels like nothing happens in 3 is the issue, right?
But 3 focuses, it's kind of slow, right?
Yeah.
There are some good character moments at the start of 3 where what's his name, the leader, tells Daisaku he can't go.
Yes.
And they do Shizuma's funeral, which is a really cool shot. Because it's like they push him out of the jet as they fly away from the nuclear power plant. But you're right, not much happens in 3. Then in 4, stuff happens. And there's a lot of stuff in 4. And then 5 is like big, big, big revelations.
Yeah, exactly.
Does 4 have the Daisaku flashback, or is that 5? It's 5.
I want to say it's 5 when he's passed out, and Genya's like, oh, he has a fever. And you think he's going to help him, but he just lets him have a fever on some, like, cold railroad tracks in the mountains.
Whom's amongst us hasn't been in that situation?
You know, it's common. I'm
going to knock out our summary. It's a little longer than last week's.
Go for it.
And then we'll get into it. The experts of justice head for Shanghai as the giant eye makes its way around the world. It travels to London, then across America, destroying the major cities in its path. In Shanghai, they plan to use an archaic electromagnetic net system that doesn't run on the Shizuma drive to launch the eye into space. However, the leader of the experts refuses to allow Tetsukyu and Daisaku to participate. At first, the plan appears to work, but Ivan sabotages the system. In the chaos, Tetsugyu and Daisaku arrive against orders to fight against Big Fire. Ivan is defeated by Giant Robo, but when they try to attack the Eye, Robo loses an arm and is deactivated. Ginrei rescues Daisaku, but is pursued by Alberto, who's stopped by Taiso. Taiso stalls for time and sacrifices his life to allow the remaining experts to escape on their airship. The elite members of Big Fire, including a man who appears to be Vogler, infiltrate the airship. Taiso's wife, Yoshi, sacrifices her life to let the others escape and to throw off the members of Big Fire. Their ship crash lands in snowy mountains, and Genya, aka the man impersonating Franken von Vogler, aka Emmanuel von Vogler, who is Ginrei's brother, has Daisaku held captive. He demands Ginrei and Tetsugyu trade the case for Daisaku's life. They try to rescue him, but Ginrei is horrified by her brother's actions and rendered useless, and Tetsugyu gives up his life to kill the shadow samurai-looking dude. We learn that it was actually Dr. Shizuma who caused the Bashtaro disaster, not Ginrei and Emmanuel's father, Franken von Vogler. Franken lived with the help of Emmanuel, and when the Shizuma drive was completed, Vogler was driven to revenge. He constructed the three experimental Shizuma drives that are now stored in the cases. Emmanuel wants to fulfill their father's wishes, but Ginrei rejects him. Daisaku summons Giant Robo, which destroys Emmanuel's mech, and then Dr. Go and the experts arrive to rescue Ginrei and Daisaku, and they meet up with Issei and Kenji Murasame. Meanwhile, Emmanuel kills Alberto, revealing that he has just been using Big Fire for his own ends, but with the consent of their leader.
Whew. It's a lot.
Yeah, I left out some of, like, the fights and, like, who Issei is. He's the monk and, like, there's like, and oh, and I left out the entire flashback about Daisaku getting Giant Robo from his dad.
Well, Kenji good thing we'll talk about that. Even though there's not a lot to talk about.
All right, for highlights. First for me.
This is about that flashback.
No, this is, I think, something it does. This is something it does to the frog. But the flashback is good, but it has the super bazooka cannon.
You're right. I mistake the two.
At the end, Ginrei has this big frog head thing he's going to fly away on. And Robo just grabs it, gets up next to it, and all of its compartments flip up, revealing missiles, and just it unloads them point blank.
Right into its mouth.
That's like in Macross when they would punch something and then just fire all the missiles inside of it. What was that called? Like the Delta attack or something?
Don't remember, but I know exactly what you're talking about, and I was going to reference that too if you didn't.
No, I almost said Jetstream Attack, but isn't that the Black Tri-Stars? So
yeah, that's the black Tri-Stars.
That for me, I was like, oh man, this is good. It just looks so good.
Yeah.
Really gets beat up in these episodes, so it's good to see him get a win like that.
I like how Robo seemingly, I guess this can be my highlight, is seemingly he has like these real robot things, like, oh yeah, he has his giant shoulders, and that's like super robot-y because they don't appear to do anything, but then they open and they're giant missiles, right? And it's like, oh, okay, so they're compartments.
Or his giant fuel tank backpack is actually a giant gun.
But for me, that was where it went super robot-y, because it's like a barrel just appears out of nowhere on the thing, and it's like, oh, I see. It's just transforming for the fun of it. And I was like, that's kind of cute, so I like that too.
And then for me, the other highlight emotionally was Taiso's death. He's fighting Alberto, and he intentionally doesn't try to beat him just to stall for time to protect the system that's keeping the eye down. And he has a giant hole in his side.
Yeah.
And he just rips a hole in him straight through him. And it's like really bloody in a way. I was like, I didn't expect it from this show. And then like through the hole, you can see the computer monitor saying that the system is still online. It's unreal. I was like, oh, this is a crazy shot.
It reminds me when Goku gets special beam cannoned by Piccolo.
You see him through the hole, right?
And yeah, if you were lucky enough to watch the original US version of Toonami. That on Toonami, it was extremely gory and not something kids should watch.
You weren't ready
for that.
The
Kai version is censored. Yeah, the Kai version is censored where it's just like dark or something.
That's the current method for censorship in Japan, is they just black it out. And then if you buy the Blu-ray, you get to see it.
Yeah, but when I was a kid, I was like, oh my, Raditz and Goku have a giant hole through their stomachs. What the heck?
That
was awesome, though.
Yeah, no, the real iconic part of that scene is the Budokai minigame where you have to mash L2 and R2 to stay in the line where Piccolo's charging up the beam.
I'm aware of that, where you're just like behind Raditz doing this stupid dance.
Something about... God. Like that part of Dragon Ball is a formative experience for people our age, for people of weeb experience.
I think that's like how we turned out the way we did, Ian, is watching all of this stuff at an extremely young, inappropriate age, and we should not have.
Oh man,
because yeah, all it turns out like not all cartoons are acceptable for small children.
I would let my kid watch Dragon. My theoretical kid
I
watch
would.
Dragon
I
Ball.
Would. I think Dragon Ball's probably fine. Dragon Ball's the only
one. Dragon Ball's better. Episode 1, though, Goku does wander around and pee on Bulma's car or something, right?
Yeah, and he, like, touches her in inappropriate spots because he doesn't
Checks
know what a female
panties.
Is.
He asks where her penis
He's
is.
He's like,
yeah.
Wait, you don't have a little wiener there? And it's like, oh, Goku, that's what happens
Dragon
when you're
Ball
just raised
so good.
By a grandpa in the woods. and you're also an alien. All right, spoilers. I'll talk about Dragon Ball all day. It's a Dragon Ball podcast now.
We're going off on the wrong tangent here. So let's get into our discussion. First, we got two big honking flashbacks.
In
this
one is much more important, and I wrote less about it. But we can.
So let's
talk
start with the unimportant one, which is the origins of Giant Robo.
Yes,
Daisaku is real young in this too. He's like seven, like something. He's a teenager now, right? Like 13.
Yeah, young adult.
And we see Daisaku's father, which is good because I kept expecting one of the villains or something to be revealed to be his father. So we get some confirmation that his father is dead, and that's what he looked like.
Yeah.
And Kenji Murasame is there in this flashback too. Our favorite pink trench coated private detective from Tetsujin 28 Go.
Yeah, who's maybe like a cyborg or something.
Because I have a moment, which is that he's bleeding a lot. I'm like, wow, he survived that. And then he gets riddled with machine gun holes again, a second time in that scene. He gets absolutely shredded.
Yeah. The scene starts where he's already dying. Then he gets shot again. And then minor spoilers.
But we know he still shows up in the modern day because we saw him in Paris.
And he comes back again.
He comes back again with bandages on his face and he rips them off. I want to know about Kenji Murasame.
Or maybe he's not a cyborg, but he's got something going on.
They all do.
Maybe his superpowers.
I really want to see what's up with him, you know? It's good because he seems like now he's joining the main cast. He was sort of off doing his own thing, but Go and them are like, oh, that man is coming to help us, and it's Kenji. So hopefully we'll get some dish there. Otherwise, we're going to have to go read Tetsujin 28 Go to figure it out.
I'll do it, man. I'm willing.
Yeah. And then we also meet Cervantes, who's a member of the Magnificent Ten, which is the Big Fire elite group that Alberto belongs to.
I didn't even remember
that. That's the guy who's piloting the other robot in that really, really good fight.
Oh, I see. I remember the certain guy who will not describe what he looks like.
Mm-hmm. What? He's just wearing, like, I don't know, a headdress? Like a khafiya, like,
Him.
No, not the guy who's the racist caricature. I'm talking about Cervantes. I was so confused. I was like, what do you mean? He's just
wearing a coat. I know what you're talking about now. He's wearing like a turban.
Yeah. And so he's also can shoot heat out of his hands.
Yeah, he's also just like,
he's got powers.
An archetype of some sort.
He's cool. I like him. Something clearly either is about to show up or he's dead. We don't know which yet.
Yeah. But that all being said, we don't really learn a lot in that flashback sequence at all. We just learn who Daisaku's father sort of is, and that's it.
I think it's meant to be important for their character development, which comes up later with Tetsugyu, because like we see that Daisaku's dad died in his arms. And he was very young and he immediately had to start fighting with Giant Robo. And that's why he like associates Giant Robo with his father, right? Giant Robo is his dad. And Giant Robo does have emotions because it cries at one point, even though that may just be water buildup. They animated, of course, to make it look like he's crying, which is awesome. And he responds to Daisaku's heartfelt pleas. That's very super robot.
Yeah. And deep down, there's like some sort of mystery involved to this as well, obviously, because Kenji Murasame is like, are you really gonna give it to your son? Like, we can't, like, that shouldn't be done. And then his father is like, I have one last thing to ask you, can you be happy without self-sacrifice? And it's like, what?
But then he's like, destroy Big Fire. So
so it's like, yeah, okay, so there's probably something else going on there.
I'm expecting one more non-nuclear power related reveal to and some sort of explanation for that we still haven't figured out. Daisaku says, why did you build him with nuclear power when we had the Shizuma drive? So we'll find that out soon enough, I hope. I mean,
that'll probably be like episode 7 or 8. Or wait, hold on. It's not 8 episodes. How long is this show?
6 or 7.
Yeah, it'll be six or seven.
Yeah. Anyway, I liked it. I mean, that fight between, that was like the most classic giant robot fight we've had in the series so far.
So that fight was so interesting to me because it was like a giant robot fight that also felt like there was like real robot damage. And whenever I think of giant robot fights,
General gets huge gashes in its chest and stuff.
I always think of like sort of like a Power Rangers fight where things just get punched and there's no weight and there's no sparks. Damage. Yeah, it's just like, oh, wow, like, this is incredible, but, like, nothing is happening. But you're right, like, he gets, like, headbutted or rammed into the chest with, like, the cool, I don't know what it is.
It's like a crescent moon shape, yeah.
Yeah, and he's got a giant scar, and it's like, you can see, like, the internals and stuff, and you're like, wait, this is, like, it's so weird. It's like a half
and half. The
fights
in this are very realistic. Like, yeah. He gets headbutted by Ivan's black brown robot, and it makes a dent. Like, all that is, they pay a lot of attention to that. Even in real robot shows, I'm thinking about Gundam, they usually cut things off in a clean manner. They cut off an arm and the arm floats away and explodes, or they shoot a hole in the chest and the whole robot explodes. That's actually very Super Robot if you think about it. It's very clean. Uh-huh. In this, it's like he'll punch and like one of his fingers will snap, or like his arm gets shredded, exactly. Or he starts leaking water, or his back breaks open, or you see the gears flying everywhere. It's way more realistic in that sense. It feels more painful, too, because you feel it, because it's a human shape. When someone's finger breaks and you see it, you're like, ah.
Or the arm gets extremely exploded off, right? You're like, oh,
When you see a Gundam get hurt, you don't feel that in the same way. But when Giant Robo gets hurt, you're like, ooh, I don't know. I didn't like that. I loved it, but I didn't like it like as a viewer.
The twist is that we're all just Giant Robo.
Piloted by our brains.
Yeah, no, or not, like, but like it's like, you know, spiritually we're Giant Robo.
I'm feeling the groans Giant Robo makes during the eye catch. Where every eye catch is a Giant Robo and he goes, ugh. That's how
it's like
I feel.
A Zoid. Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about the bigger reveal and probably more important to the overall plot of
maybe. So Vogler has two kids. Emmanuel and Familia.
Yeah, Familia.
Familia. But we know them, which makes perfect sense because they are European. And I was like, how can Ginray be his kid if her name is Ginray? How strange. No, it's because her name is some sort of vaguely Germanic thing like Vogler is. So good job resolving that. But they both adapted Chinese styled like pseudonyms, which is Genya for Emmanuel and Ginray for Familia.
Yes.
And so what happened was Go Sensei was actually Vogler's assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And they like show the night of the incident. And we learned that actually Vogler was opposed to running that test because there was still a 2% like undisclosed margin of error or something that we don't know.
Yeah, that's like a huge mystery thing behind that.
What 2% of what? Yeah, so then Shizuma's like, no, we've got to do it. We've got to advance forward. And the other guys are like, yeah, we're kind of tired of not doing this. So Shizuma goes ahead and does it. And then when it starts to fail, they bail. And Franken von Vogler is like, no, I've got to stay for some reason and make this happen. I didn't really understand his change of heart.
I think it was like it is hard to explain. He was like so upset with his comrades because they went behind him, right, to do this thing. Mm-hmm. Where he's like, if we're gonna do it, we got to do it, you know?
Yeah, like, I think that's what it was.
So he's like, you can run away and stuff, but I'm gonna see this to the end because like they made like a lot of references to like standing on the shoulders of giants and stuff, and like or mountain of failures, and that's mm-hmm. what science is, and it was like some sort of, I don't know. I felt like there was something a little personal
so
behind
like
that.
It was weird to me that he was so opposed to doing it. And then when they started doing it, he's like, no, we've got to try it despite the chance for failure. And I was like, what? That's like a major flip flop. But in any case, he stays behind. Go and Ginray teleport away because Ginray and Genya both can teleport.
Which we found out.
Because mm-hmm. we knew she had powers and we knew that they hurt her, but we didn't know what. So good job foreshadowing that. That wasn't a total ass pull. So they get away. And then Emmanuel actually saves his dad. And so Go and Ginray go join the Experts of Justice, whereas Emmanuel and Vogler stay underneath Bashtarl. Vogler goes catatonic. Then Emmanuel shows up. He's like, look, they finished the Shizuma drive. And his dad freaks out and goes into the lab, builds these experimental Shizuma drives, and dies. And then Genya's like, he wanted revenge on the Shizuma drive, so I'm doing what he wanted. I'm recreating the tragedy of Bashtarl. This feels a lot like Genya just extrapolating. I would not be surprised if in the next two episodes we learn that Vogler wanted something else altogether.
I think Emmanuel, our boys, is probably just a little upset for his father. And it's just like, you know what? Screw these guys.
I mean, to be fair, Shizuma did lie to the entire world about who's responsible for the tragedy of Bashtar, drag his name through the mud, etc., etc., and then become rich and famous.
Yeah. So I get it.
There's some... It's not unjustified anger, but I don't think he's quite interpreting his father's decisions.
But there is, like, a little bit of a twist here, right? Where it's like, are the Shizuma drives the be-all, end-all, right? Because it's mm-hmm. like, what if we find out, and that I don't know, this is just, you know, predictions, maybe those three Shizuma drives are not meant to turn off, like, the existing Shizuma drives or something, or maybe there's, like, another thing behind that that's also with the hidden 2% of, like, why Shizuma drives are maybe inefficient. And, like, maybe, I don't know, we'll find out something here about that, because it would seem a little flat if this show just sort of played a course, right? Yeah. Where, like, they, like, were like it, here's what I don't want to happen. This is, like, kind of going ahead. But I don't want them to next episode regroup, make a plan to take down Genya, and then in episode 7 do the plan and win, right? That right. feels a little...
easy.
Yeah, it's like that's what how I expect it to go, and if that's how it goes, I'll probably be okay with it, but it's like,
It seems
I want
to
there
me
to be
there
like
is,
a twist with this family stuff.
There is a mystery here with the Shizuma drive, too. There's something wrong with the Shizuma drive. There's something bad about it. That Dr. Shizuma is like, I've done something terrible by creating the Shizuma drive. Maybe not just about the tragedy of Bashtarl. I would be dissatisfied, and I think this bears out with the nuclear metaphor we mentioned last week. If we learn that the Shizuma drive isn't free energy.
Yeah, like, or what if they're all mini nukes, right? Like, they could explode at any second.
Something like that, where there is some drawback or horror, and it's like everything was covered up by the government or the scientists because they didn't want to threaten the world's peace. That then it would really feel like they brought the nuclear thing home. Like, accepting, because you have to accept the risks, you can't forget the danger of the power you use. I think there's going to be something like that. It would be really, the show has already shown itself to be willing to do twists and to kill characters. So I would expect that something happens like that.
I hope so, too. But I think that's an incredibly interesting backstory between those three. I was not expecting that kind of thing to happen.
No, I like it, though. It was well done.
Yeah.
And it was really cool to see the same shots. So in the old flashback of the Bashtarl incident, we saw one shot with Frankie von Vogler. And then this one, we saw the shot, but instead it was Shizuma doing the same thing that Vogler was doing. Like, the faces were
switched. Yeah.
That was clever. Good job.
Yeah, because we saw that, what, in episode 2? That was like
they're making a lot of use. They do not have a lot of time, but they do fill it with they do good foreshadowing for a show that's so short. So then I want to talk briefly, I wrote a lot of notes here, we don't have to get into it too much, but there's that whole thing where Tetsugyu goes to rescue Daisaku. Tetsugyu, who's one of the first characters we meet in this show, is dead now. Right, as far as we know. He gets shot like 8 times.
Does he also
this is giant
stabbed
also
in the stomach?
Yeah.
So, who knows if he's dead? He could come back. He's a big boy.
I hope he doesn't, honestly. He gets a great moment here.
Yeah, so he does this thing where he's sort of the immature little boy character. In a funny way, because he's huge and not a little boy. Because as we were talking about a little bit before the show, is that he refers to Taiso as his older brother. And he may or may not be, because they like kind of look like they're the same. Honestly.
They do look similar.
But regardless of the fact, is that he's always portrayed as someone who's looking up to someone else and seeking guidance. And that sort of paints him as the little brother, right? And in this, you know, situation that you're explaining, is like he takes his future and his responsibility into his own hands. And that's like a really good, like, growing moment, which is a little sad, but a little great that it's kind of the end for him.
Yeah, there's a nice moment where he gets over his jealousy of Daisaku by realizing that they're the same. That actually, like, he thought he was a weak little kid or whatever, but both their parents work for Big Fire. Tetsugyu killed his father. Daisaku watched his father die. And he wanted to sort of make Daisaku suffer a little to show him the reality of the world, but he already knew that. He didn't realize. Mm-hmm. And he realized that actually, it was tragic to watch someone go through all that suffering. He said, oh, when Giant Robo was destroyed, it's the same face I had when I killed my father. Giant Robo was like his father. So he's like, then he sort of gets around. He's like, I've got to help. And he gets a good moment of him with the sword, like walking forward through the gunshots. Something that just came to me totally off topic is that Yoshi, right? The blue skinned girl, Taiso's wife, has to be a Monkey King takeoff, right? because she's got the staff and she can shapeshift.
Those are
like the two characteristics I know from Journey to the West.
She got the fly Nimbus, you know, she got it from Master Roshi.
But I do think the staff and the shape changing are part of that. Or maybe that's just a common archetype in Chinese mythology, but
I think you're right, but I actually have no I only know about that story from our favorite show of all time, Dragon Ball.
It comes back. It always comes back.
I know, right?
The power pole. In any case, that was a good moment. And it was nice that they gave Tetsugyu a full arc and then killed him. I hope. I think it would be an interesting moment for Daisaku and Ginrei to have to reckon with his death. And it's like a very fractured Experts of Justice.
Wouldn't it be like incredibly awful if all of these dead characters came back at the end and were like, just kidding, we all actually lived.
I trust this show too much for that.
Because like I can just see it now where like Taiso's like got a bandage around him and he's like he's limping and like Yoshi's carrying him on one arm and they're like, yeah, we actually somehow all got back together and I was, you know, getting the remnants of our group. I'll be like incredibly upset.
I was surprised they let Issei live, but that was fine. The monk.
Yeah, even though he's like the least developed character.
He's the least developed, but he also seems like one of the most powerful. So I guess that makes sense. He's got like straight up teleportation magic and all sorts of stuff. So I guess he would make sense to live.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the direction of this show.
Okay.
I don't mean the directing, but like where it's headed. You sort of touched on this, which is that you don't want things to wrap up very neatly.
Yes.
I feel that the show is a very classic structure, right? We have the exciting introduction where we reveal like it's sort of hero's journey-ish, if you'll forgive some Joseph Campbell. He's like, oh, he's got the magic item, Giant Robo, that helps him win. And then he sets off on an adventure. Then they have a major failure and lose something precious to them. And now they're beginning to regroup and like head for that final encounter. I think there is literally in like the Dan Harmon, Joseph Campbell reckoning of the story. There's a moment called the reckoning with the father, which is like the good moment is you meet with your mother. And then you have a moment where you meet with your father. So this is like Darth Vader. It has a Darth Vader moment, which is when Genya and Ginrei have that whole thing. So
it feels
like we're really hitting these beats. So do you think this will end straightforwardly? Or do you think they're going to start throwing things at you?
God, maybe it's because we're just like so effed up from watching so much mecha and stupid anime that like I sort of want them to be like the Shizuma drives are actually human souls and we have this underground facility where we like kill
like,
people
like and, an like, Evangelion
and it's like yeah like I kind of want that though because I feel like if they play it straight it's like what's the point, man, you know, like I came here to watch some garbage and I came out with just like a normal show people can watch. I know this is stupid and it's me sort of overreacting, but I want there to be at least something. I don't want it to, like, as I said, I don't want them to do that thing where they regroup, right? Because that's what they're doing now, or what they
and Go kind of has discovered doing. Something. He's done some science.
Yeah, and then I don't want them to be like, actually, if we run this sonic emitter, it will deactivate, and it's like, oh no, I don't want that. And then
you've written the newest Avengers movie, Dan.
Yeah, and then at the end, Genya actually apologizes and realizes that his father was wrong or didn't want that, and then they're all happy, and it's like, no, that's exactly what I don't want.
Yeah, and then Giant Robo flies a nuke through a portal, and it closes behind
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, I accidentally set off this giant orb thing to blow up, and then Giant Robo groans, and then he like Daisaku has a really heartwarming moment where he cries, but realizes he has to let go of Giant Robo, and that's how it ends. And it's like, but it's actually not true because Giant Robo lives at the end, and they're all happy.
Yeah, you. Ow! Oh,
I just knocked my table too. But
don't say things it's like that.
We could be modern. We could be like a duo.
Joss Whedon's job is not actually very hard.
Like we could just. Where do we apply? Like, where can we just become directors?
The problem is that anyone can do what we just did, Dan, and that's been proven time and time again. So,
yeah.
Okay. My hope is that Giant Robo has really made an exercise of going as big as possible. Like, every time they're going to do something, like, someone with superpowers shows up, or there's another giant robot, or there's a twist, or they've really gone for it. I would feel disappointed if Giant Robo settled. I think there is going to be like a Shizuma Drive related 11th hour twist that puts this in a completely new direction.
I hope so. Or at least I hope if it doesn't do that, it goes out strong, right? Like you said, like I hope all like the characters that are dead are dead. maybe more characters will die. Like, I want it to go out in a big way regardless. And if it doesn't have a huge twist, I understand, because this is like a high budget, super weird OVA thing where like it sort of in some ways can't, because it might be too over engineered.
No. We'll see. I think there was shockingly little oversight on this series. I think they let the director do whatever he wanted. Otherwise he wouldn't have gone over budget.
I hope so.
And I don't know, this show's not afraid to make lasting changes. Three major characters, Taiso, Tetsugyu, Alberto, plus one minor character, Yoshi, are dead, right?
Yes.
That's pretty impressive that they did that just five episodes in. They're clearly not, and this is the advantage of OVAs, we talked about this with Gunbuster, they're clearly not afraid to go as big as possible and to make these lasting changes. So I hope that, like, we get a few more character deaths. Not necessarily character deaths, I hate to, like, root for character death, but lasting changes like that. Seriously taken.
Yeah.
But they could biff it. I've seen shows biff it this hard.
I think that's the worst thing, is we're like so jaded, right? Like we are damaged humans from watching
so much mecha.
like we see the world differently now, Ian. It's like, here we go, time to watch another mecha. I think I know there's like, I choose one of three endings, Ian. You know them, so go ahead.
Okay, here are the three endings to all mecha series. Ending one, the Human Instrumentality Project.
Yes, that's one of them.
Ending two, the war continues. It doesn't have an ending. They accomplish a mission, but they're like, but the fights... This is the Full Metal Panic style ending, right? They got to leave it open to future adaptations.
Also the one we just watched, Votom's ending.
Yeah, the Votom's ending. Ending three, the enemy is defeated and it ends within 2 minutes. And there's no actual ending.
That's 98%.
That's the Gundam Zeta Gundam ending. It's like, the war's over. See you in 10 years.
Yeah, that's also 00, right? Where they're like we've done it. And then there's like the final shot is them on the Ptolemaios. And they're like, and we will be Gundam Meisters forever. And it's like, wait, what? What is that? It's just the ending.
Those are the three endings to all mecha shows.
That's actually, I hate how that was like a bit and you just named them. And it's like, yeah, that's actually accurate. That's like, that's them. That's all of them.
Dan, do you think, this may be a better question for next week, but we may have more to talk about next week than this week. Do you think this is a good show for newcomers? Because newcomers to the mecha genre might be a better way to put it. Maybe not newcomers to anime in general.
This is tough. This is like looking through it with a different lens. I think this show is super watchable, but is it understandable and is it good is a different question, I think.
That's a good point.
I talk about this like it's a bad thing, but we've watched so much stuff that we can sort of get into something easily because we have a lot of stuff to compare it to, a lot of stuff to contrast it to. And it's like,
starting something brand new. Oh, this is doing that thing.
Yeah, starting something brand new is a little tough, right? Because you can feel lost. You can say, like, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's important, what I'm supposed to pay attention to. It's difficult. And that's with any medium, right? It's like with a different book you're reading, a video game, like literally anything. It's easy to get lost. But for this, I'm trying to think, if you're brand new to anime, is this watchable? Or if you're brand new to mecha, like you said. I think if you're brand new to mecha, it's a little bit easier. Because I think there's a lot of... I mean, the show has not a lot of mech fights. We get like one kind of... biggish one.
There's
Robo,
one in the beginning and then one in the flashback that are real mech fights.
Yeah, and the rest are sort of superhero-y fights or just, you know, anime fights.
Yeah, and there are a couple times where Robo punches a robot, but that ends the fight immediately. It's hardly a fight, you know, like
so big. I don't know. What do you think?
Here's my take. Here's why. Yeah. I think you're right that it can seem confusing, but I think, and there are a lot of elements in this show, but I think what makes this so easy is that it's very spectacle driven. Like stuff just happens on the screen and you can just be like, I love it. I don't need to think about why this is happening. They don't try to explain it. It's not complicated. They're like, oh yeah, some of the people in this show have superpowers. And you're like, word. That's it. It's very straightforward in that respect. It hits the certain benchmark of quality that you need when you're introducing someone to something, you know, good animation, good writing, good music, sort of thing.
Everything. Yeah.
It's very like classical in a way. Like it's watchable in a sense that you sort of understand what it's doing, even if you haven't seen a lot of this stuff. You're like, yeah, this feels like a classic series. To me, it reminds me of like Fleischer Superman cartoons, the old like 60s animated Superman or 50s, where you watch those and you're just like, yeah, this is super. Like you just get them intuitively.
Uh-huh.
And when you watch Giant Robo, I suspect that even without a basis of knowledge in mecha, you'll be, watch it and be like, yeah, Big Fire's evil. We're the good guys. Giant robot shows up to punch people. Something bad's happening. And they reiterate the key points of the setting enough that it's graspable.
Uh-huh. Okay. I agree with like 98% of what you just said. I think the only part where this show falls apart for, I think, for non-familiar anime viewers, that made any sense, is that I think this show has way too many side character crossovers from other shows and stuff, where if you're one of those people who like kind of overthink things, and not in a bad way, but like if you show this to someone who's brand new, they'll be like, wait, who's that Kenji Murasame? Like, why? And this guy?
Yeah, they expect more introduction.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people can get hung up on that. Some people don't care. Like, I think as if you watch a lot of anime, you're sort of used to that in a way. Maybe that's like a little bit.
Yeah, like you're used to like Japanese starting thing. The chunin exams, and there's like 60 unique looking characters in an area, and you don't care about any of them because you know that they're not going to matter.
Exactly. It's really good. And some of them do, right? So in the show sort of takes its course that way. But I think, yeah, that's the only thing. I think that might be.
That's a very good point. It's
not necessarily a problem, but that is something that could be an issue. I don't know. It's like a.
And I think what I like about this is that we talked how this is a lot like Lupin. I think here's why. Is that this is, it's not like a, in the same way Lupin movies aren't really crime movies. There's thievery in them, but it's not like you're watching an Ocean's 11 movie. Like, Lupin is to Ocean's 11 as Giant Robo is to Gundam, right? Like,
yes.
Giant Robo is an adventure movie. It's not really a mecha movie where it's doing like the mecha things we're used to. In the same way that when you watch a Lupin movie, you're in it for the antics and the desperation
and the fighting. The heists.
Yeah, the heists are just an avenue for the characters to do things in.
And it's a way for Fumiko to do my boy dirty.
Right. And it's just really, and you're happy to watch them play around in that and to see the Lupin performance and the cool animation. In the same way, you just sort of want to watch Giant Robo and let it happen in front of you.
That's a really good point. Because we last week were like, this is kind of Lupin-like. But it was hard for us to articulate. We both
nothing like Lupin.
But yeah, you're right. That they are very similar in that way. Where they're like, even though they're kind of both like not lighthearted, they feel lighthearted in a way. They're portrayed as lighthearted, kind of.
Yes.
Like Giant Robo has a lot of bad stuff happening, but it's still like kind of bright and colorful.
It still feels like you're watching a 60s cartoon.
Yeah.
Even though it's made in the 90s and it's serious and it's dark and it's like intense, it still gives you that sense of nostalgia for like this time.
Yeah.
Something else, there's very minimal fan service. There's one exception, and this might be the only exception because there's literally one female character in the entire show. Two, actually. Yoshi and Ginrei, who wears a really short dress all the time, and then she puts on her warm winter outfit, and it's also a really short dress. I kind of thought that was hilarious.
Santa Claus themed. So yeah, I actually noticed that as well, but I sort of overlooked it because you're right. It's so tropey.
Something
is so tropey, it's sort of forgivable in a way, I think, right? Because the fact that it was a Santa, like, it was, like, red and white.
What I like about it is that she didn't address it. So it would have been one thing for her to pick it up, look at it, and sigh, like, someone gave this to me. But she just puts it on, like, this is normal. And the way,
like, maybe she chose it, you know?
The joke isn't that she thinks it's dumb. Or they're not, like, acknowledging it. It's just that, like, this is something that would happen in the 60s, but we're seeing it in the 90s. And she's acting like a character from the 60s. Like, she doesn't notice it, but the audience does, and the show clearly does in a way that's like, isn't this really dumb? But not doing it with a wink at the audience. It's sort of relying on you to understand, like, what? That's so stupid, but in a way that you're like, but of course it would be like that.
You're totally right in a way that I never thought about it before, or at least I forgot, where there's some sort of acknowledgement for that kind of stuff, that where if the show acknowledges it, it automatically becomes cringy and stupid. Mm-hmm. But if they sort of don't acknowledge it, and it's not like overblown. It's sort of three
layers
off
to it, right? There's shows that do that sort of thing unironically, where you're just like, oh God, it's dumb, it's fan service, it's annoying, it's stupid. There are shows where they acknowledge it. And at that point, usually I'm just like, okay, you're so clever, but you're still putting her in a skimpy dress. And then there's this, which is like doing this weird thing where they're putting her in a skimpy dress, but in a way that acknowledges the absurdity of the situation without undercutting the source material. I don't know. It's a complicated emotion that I'm having a hard time expressing.
Yeah,
like, I think this is a good way of doing this.
We maybe felt the same way about it, where it was like, it like crossed my mind for a split second, and then I stopped caring. I was like, oh yeah, of course. Because, like, you know, okay, first, yeah, you're right. She's a character with like a skimpy dress, and she's like, yeah, I'm gonna say she,
it's,
you know,
really
sexy.
Short.
She's
it's
a sexy
it's
girl,
ridiculously
right?
short, by the way.
And it's like, whoa, and her legs. I was like. Because it's kind of fun to see how they draw the proportions of female characters. And not necessarily I'm talking about the boobs and the butt, right? But I'm talking about, like, the other stuff. And if you watch, like, a scene where her and Daisaku are standing together, like, mm-hmm. his head, like, goes up to her,
waist. Thigh, right? Or like, maybe, yeah.
Like, her hips, right? Where her legs are the entire length of Daisaku's
really
body. And it's funny because it's just like, yeah, she's our resident sexy girl who has like a really tiny dress that, like, if a normal girl wore, would not even go over her butt, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, anime proportions, it's fine. But yeah, I think that's a funny, interesting thing.
The last thing I want to do is a little note. This is more about what we talked about last week, where we talked about how there are characters being pulled from all over Yokoyama's works, right?
Yes.
And something I learned in between recordings is that Osamu Tezuka, of course, Tezuka, had something he called his star system, based on the Hollywood star system, where, you know, actors would show up in movies or whatever. Like, you would see three different science fiction movies and the same actor would be in each of them, right? That's just how movies work.
Uh-huh.
And there was some wit methodology in the 50s behind this system. And he called it his Osamu Tezuka star system was that he would have characters from all his manga cross over into the other ones. So if he needed, like, a doctor, he would have, like, Dr. Blackjack show up in all of his manga. And if he needed, like,
oh, is Blackjack from this guy?
No, it's from Tezuka. But I'm saying Tezuka would have, if he needed a character in a certain archetype, he would bring them in and do the thing. And
that's interesting.
So they cross over in, like, all these different ways. And this feels a bit like a Tezuka star system, where they're, like, and Tezuka and Yokoyama are contemporaries of each other. They're, like, they're very closely related in that way.
Oh man, I really like that, and I'm trying to think. I feel like I've seen something else do that, and I can't think of it. But yeah, that is really cool.
Yeah.
Besides, games do that stuff all the time.
There's also Pluto, but Pluto is an Astro Boy adaptation. So, by Naoki Urasawa, great, great manga. We should read that sometime. That'd be a good one. All right.
You know, actually, I take it back. This is a lot like Death Stranding, where they have a crossover by Norman Reedus and The Walking Dead.
You know, it's Conan O'Brien outfit or whatever.
It's like an otter, I think.
That's an otter, yeah.
But anyhow, yeah, that's cool. That's cool, though. I really like that. Where using your I think the best thing is it's like a super big flex to do something like that, because it's like, oh yeah, I'm a big deal and I have a lot of really, like, noticeable and recognizable works that I can do that with. Mm-hmm. You can't do that if you're a nobody. Sort of sounds like stupid fan fiction.
Yeah, it does. All right.
Oh, I know that's from. It's from our favorite thing of all time, Marvel. You know. Same with Joe.
And moving on.
Get it? Okay, I'm sorry.
The mech corner is pretty short, because two of the robots, so there's that giant brown robot, which is exactly the same as the giant gold robot from last week, but it's brown.
Yes. Yes.
Then we've got this frog head flying saucer robot.
Oh, wait, I want to talk about this thing. This thing's sick. This thing's
cool.
Also, it reminds me of Mega Man 100%, like you said last time. Like, this
yeah,
is
the
like...
Mega Man vibes are still going pretty strong, to be honest.
Because this thing is so nonsensical, where it's just a flying frog head, where its eyeballs, like, shoot out and ram stuff, and then go back into its head, you know?
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense, and
that's
I love it.
Good. Then there's this, they give it a name, but I've forgotten, but it's sort of like a diver type, right? Because it swims underwater. It's got a crescent moon head. It's deep blue. It's as big as Robo, and it shoots its rocket fists at people.
You spoke too quickly for me to make a Bill Divers joke, but yeah. I like this thing because this is like the closest we'll probably ever get to, like, an actual...
It's,
like,
another humanoid robot.
Fight.
It's the first
humanoid robot
besides Giant Robo. And it came out of, like, the same hangar, so they're probably made as part of the same program or something, right?
Yes. This thing was cool. I liked it.
Oh, yeah.
Too bad it didn't last long for this world.
I love the rocket punch. Makes me think of Sentinel from Marvel vs. Capcom.
Oh, yeah. I like how he shoots both of them and he's, like, grabbing them against his chest because it's, like, they're still rocket-powered, you know?
Yeah, that was really cool. Anyway, still pretty good mech design. I mean, Giant Robo is still the standout, obviously, but... Mm-hmm. I'm hoping we'll get some nice robot stuff at the end here. That would be a good way to finish this off, right?
Yeah, and hopefully it's just not another version of Giant Robo, because that would suck. And I hate when things do that. Yeah, I actually built a second Giant Robo, but this one's a different color. And then they groan at each other with that cool Giant Robo groan. It's like an it's like the Z or the Zaku eye thwong.
The whatever. Eye flash. Vroom. Yeah.
Yeah.
The motto
it's
eye
like
lights
Giant
up.
Robo's groan. It's like,
that is cool. The signature. Like all right, Dan. Final thoughts.
I hate doing final thoughts before the ending because I always give this stupid like 2-minute thing where I say, I hope it ends this way. Even though we kind of already talked about how we want the show to end. But the show's just been good, right? I think I'm a little, I don't want to say I've went down on it, but it's like my expectations were low. I watched the first two episodes. They were higher. But now that I'm used to it, I'm sort of now waiting just to see how the story wraps up in a way where I'm sort of like, I'm worn off of how good it looks, sadly, even though it looks amazing, right? But like, I'm ready.
It means,
I'm ready
just means
for
that whatever we watch next is going to suffer as a result of it, because we're going to be like, it doesn't look as good as Giant Robo.
Spoilers. We still haven't talked about what we're watching next, and now I'm getting anxiety. So yeah, I don't know, man. I am waiting with bated breath as always, because if it's a good show, it only has the potential to be bad, right? Because it's still, yeah. It's good. It's been good so far, right, Ian? So if it ends well, it'll still be the same. It'll be good. It'll be a great show. But if it goes off the rails, if it becomes bad, I will be so sad. I'll be incredibly disappointed. So I don't know, man. I'm worried. I'm scared.
We do say the same thing every time.
I know. But here's the thing. I think it's going to be good. Because I think... No. I'm going to jinx myself. I don't want to do it. All right, Ian. What do you think?
I think you're right about how jaded we've become. Because...
We've been jaded.
We always enjoy a series. We just did this with Votoms, and we get to the second to last episode and they're like, it all depends on how it ends. And we're not afraid to say, I think this is going to be great. We're not willing to say it. I mean, we're afraid to say it because we're convinced somehow they're going to mess it up.
Yeah.
And I believe this will end well. I've really enjoyed everything so far. I think the way it's been going has made me feel like there's no way there's a cop out. They knew they were finishing with this. They knew this was their finale. And there's no way it's... And the last episode is longer than usual. It's like 54 minutes again. So I think they're going to, like, crush this ending. That's my thinking. And there are so many ways they could do it. Literally, all they have to do is not do the most obvious thing, and I will be happy.
Don't give us a Marvel ending.
Yeah,
Giant Robo actually gets the Infinity Stones and snaps his remaining arm. And
if this becomes a Human Instrumentality ending, that would be better. That would be fine.
Or something. Yeah, or something. Just give me something.
Next week, as always, I mean, Giant Robo 6 and 7 finishing it up. This means that also Dan and I have to start thinking about what else we want to watch after this. Yeah. What poor series do we sacrifice on the altar of Giant Robo, right?
Yeah, like, cause man, I honestly, off the top of my head, I can't think of anything that can like really.
Do we just watch something we know is going to be bad? Is it like Seed?
I think we have to. Yeah, we have to like put it on the altar and kill it, right? Because
we're going to predispose to hate whatever comes next. Because we've had two good shows in a row. We've had Votoms and Giant Robo.
Yeah, it's been a good uphill battle.
We haven't suffered enough. That's the problem.
I'm not masochistic. All right.
So finish Giant Robo for next week. If you want to reach out to us and tell us about if like Tezuka and Yokoyama were friends or something, like what their deal was, you can reach us at mechadoaboutnothing@gmail.com. That's the name of the podcast @gmail.com. Our website is mechadoo.moe, and our Twitter account is @mechadoopodcast. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Ian.
Till next time, will you be able to survive?